Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
Oh, sinner, do not stray from the straight and narrow way, for the Lord is surely watching what you do. If you approach the devil's den, turn round, don't enter in, lest the hand of the Almighty fall on you. He'll fuck you up. Yes, God will fuck you up if you dare to disobey his stern command. He'll fuck you up. So you better do some praying while you can. Long ago a man named Lot had a wife he thought was hot, but she could not stop her black and sinful ways. You know it was her own damn fault when God turned that bitch to salt. That's the way he used to work back in those days. He fucked him up. He really fucked him up. Went and turned their backs on him. He can fuck you up. No shit, he'll fuck you up, just like he fucked the people up back then. I used to have a friend named Ray, who walked that evil way. He cursed and drank and broke his neighbor's fence. You know Ray was full aware that some sheep were over there, and he knew them in the biblical sense. God fucked him up. He went and fucked Ray up. Went and paid him back for all his wicked sins. He fucked him up. Fucked that boy completely up. Now he's married to a Presbyterian.
It's working, but I don't feel it.
Okay. You have to be right on top of it like this.
So, do you remember this? This is Mirthbow at Jabberjaw. And we were there for this.
I do remember. Is that working? There we go.
It's number three, I think.
I remember Mirthbow because it was exceedingly loud. It sounded like a jet engine. This! It sounded like this.
This is what it is, yeah.
It's Radio Mysterio, so I've guessed who's sitting in the DJ chair right now. It's Bennett, whose show Chillroom is on Friday nights, actually Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m., usually.
Actually, it's from 11 p.m. until 2 to 3 a.m. Yeah.
Really now?
Yeah.
I could not stay on that long.
Well, I do so much different. So this is, this is at Jabberjaw in Los Angeles on October 8th, 1996.
That was a while ago. That was before Kill Radio, and it was before...
Hey, it's before KBLT.
KBLT, yeah. Bennett actually introduced me to KBLT, the pirate radio station that I was on for a couple of years. He gave me his slot for my first shot on the radio. I was nervous as hell. And then when Kill Radio started up, he told me about that. And
well, I met Greg the very first night that I arrived in Los Angeles.
Oh, was that when the first day you were here?
The first night that I was here, I met you.
Yeah, you came over with Beth.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've had a long history. From the night I arrived in L.A., I've known you. So
yeah.
Here we are. Almost so, 20 years fucking later.
That's frightening. The other, I was looking through my papers today, and I found a flyer or a program from the Bindle Stiff Family Circus that was at Rush Riddle's place. This is a large kind of art collective type place in right near USC here in Los Angeles. And that circus was basically what now people know as those freaks circus shows that go around
it was an actual circus.
But it was actual circus of people traveling from the
wire stuff.
Yeah,
they did
from the East
stuff.
Coast. There was a contortionist that got in a box.
Sex involved too,
and there was I remember if you paid an extra dollar, you could go to an abandoned room and watch the girl with a strap-on wire dildo with a piece of cotton that was on fire shove it up a guy's butt and put it out.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was
and
great.
And she wore a dress that had no back, so her derriere was showing.
Yes, I remember staring at her quite a bit.
Yeah,
she noticed that I was doing that.
Well, she was quite good-looking young woman.
Philomena,
that's yes. Who that was. That's right. You can look her up online, PH.
Yes. So Bennett's sitting in the DJ chair. I guess I can just... Oh, there we go. I guess I can just sit around for this show.
Well, I hope that we can do some talking, but I've done on the Chill Room recently, I've been doing a lot of Beatle-oriented things. Now,
I don't know why I've been listening to the Beatles a lot recently.
Well, for the longest time, I wouldn't because I'm so obsessed with the Beatles. So
I
would try to not do Beatle-oriented things. But for John Lennon's 70th birthday celebration, I did a John Lennon show. And then since then, I've been playing Beatle covers like every week. There's just been other covers that are coming in. So the New Year's Eve show, which I call Old Future, New Past, basically a show about Beatle mashups. Though I stuck to the mashups where the Beatles' voices were used. But anyway, what I want to play now, and this will take us a few minutes, is Revolution Take 20.
Have you seen that one? Ever heard that one before?
Love the Jews, Love Me Do, Beatles? No, I have not.
We'll play that later.
We'll play that one, then I'll have a copy of it. So this is this was recorded on the 4th of June, 1968. It is the most recent Beatle track to have escaped into the universe. And it's 2 years old already. It's been around for 2 years.
Yeah.
But it was recorded 4 June 1968. It is Revolution. It's a submix where they take 19 and they do overdubs onto it as to turn it into take 20. And it's 10 minutes long.
Who did the overdubs?
The Beatles themselves.
Oh, so this is an actual recorded, engineered Beatle track that was never released.
It's never been released, yes.
Who was doing the engineering on it? George Martin and Lennon or something?
Jeff Emmerich was the
was the
engineer on this. It's John's song, but all four of the Beatles are there. You don't really hear much of George or Ringo talking. But
see how obsessed he is?
Hear Paul in here. And this is probably the most... what I'm hoping for is an experimental Beatles CD where they go in, yeah. where they get the 27-minute Helter Skelter. They get the we know it exists, the Carnival of Light tape that they did in January 1967. And this, those just those three things together would make a fantastic album.
Yeah, did you know I finally sold that Get Back Sessions I had?
The box.
Yeah, the one that looks like a film canister.
Right.
I sold it to a guy in Russia for $300.
There you go. Well, you know that...
I recorded the Get Back album. I digitized it, but the rest of it I didn't.
Well, I actually copied the Get Back album from that to my collection.
Okay, so you've got
90s.
It. Yeah.
But what has been done is finally somebody has collected all of the Get Back material.
Oh, okay.
And it was finally done a few years ago. Guess how many CDs it is?
10.
83.
That's ridiculous.
It's called the AB Sessions, and it's the entire camera recordings.
Oh, okay.
Of the Get Back Sessions.
Okay, so you can because I like
all
the
of Twickenham and yeah. all of Abbey Road.
Okay, because I like the I'm so much at a lot smaller level than you. I tend to like the Get Back Session thing that I have because it is non-Phil Spector produced.
That's what Let It Be Naked was.
Yeah.
A few years ago was
right,
to
strip
the stuff away from the Phil Spector sheet.
Right, right.
And it had nothing to do with the fact that Phil Spector's a murderer.
No, I tend to like it more than the Wall of Sound sounding stuff. I don't want to hear a bunch of angels in a chorus singing behind Paul McCartney. I just want to hear that music.
But you know,
music.
That's been done on like the Double Fantasy album.
Yeah.
The most recent box set of Lennon material contains a naked, stripped Double Fantasy.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
That Yoko had done.
Yeah.
Because, as John would say, the more sure of myself, the less instruments you'll find on my records.
Right, right, right.
So if you go to the John Lennon Plastic Ono Band album, there's just piano,
yeah.
guitar, bass, and drums. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And so that's how assured of himself he was. When you get
Do you want
the,
any of that?
The
I brought in some absinthe.
But you get to the Walls and Bridges album and the Double Fantasy album, you'll find there's like 30 overdubs on every track, and there's just tons of music. And that basically shows that John wasn't sure of himself at the time.
Yeah.
You know. But Yoko has released this stripped-down version. I think it's three CDs of session work of Walls of not Walls and
Double
Bridges,
Fantasy.
Double Fantasy. With all of the horn overdubs and all that crap just stripped away. However, the only way you can get it right now is to buy the goddamn box set, which costs like $150. So.
Right. I still don't have all the mono. Anyway, let's play this.
This is
how long is this?
This is 10 minutes long. It's Revolution, take 20. And as John says, take your knickers off and let's go.
Listen, all in one will take.
Don't worry.
Take your knickers off and let's go.
As you said.
Every bit of
Revolution, take 20. Revolution, take 20.
Solution. tell you his brother, you have to wait. Well, you know,
It is that.
Before they take us away. Revolution.
Oh, that's, whoa! Look at that.
That's good. Revolution take 20.
Yep.
By the Beatles.
Now this one's hooked up. Okay. I do not have control of the board. Bennett has taken control of the board because most of the stuff that we're listening to, he brought in. It's Radio Mysterio, so if you didn't come in at the beginning here, this is I'm on the show here with Bennett, who his show is also on Kill Radio. It's called Chill Room. It's on Friday night, Sunday morning.
It's on Friday nights, yes.
It's Friday night, Saturday morning from 11 at night till 2 or 3, whenever he feels like.
You can always find my archives on the Kill Radio website.
Which is what I should do.
Yes, you need to post your stuff on the Kill Radio page.
Yeah, so because people will listen. Anyway,
By the way, I want to ask you something.
I would not be here if Bennett had not told me about Kill Radio at the beginning. In September of 2000.
Over 10 years now.
Yeah.
Over 10 years. Next Saturday night, we're having a fundraiser for Kill Radio. Are you busy next Saturday night?
I might be at work. I do not know. I have to work that weekend, but you never know when I'm going to get out.
So you can't plan things because you don't.
Not
know
on that week.
Schedule.
Not on those weekends.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't. It depends on the work load. If there's more stuff, I have to stay, and if there's not as much, I can get out early.
If it's possible to get out early, then I'm hoping that you'll come to this event.
What time?
It's starting at around 8 or 9 o'clock
at night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's.
And it's going
almost
until about
certain
2 in the
that I'll
morning.
Be out before then.
And I know that it's over in Culver City, so I'm going to need a ride home at the very least. So
okay.
I know.
Kill Radio is Poe. We's Poe and Ghetto.
As I say on my show, it's Poe Los Angeles.
Yeah.
We're from poor Los Angeles, and that's what we do.
So Bennett's obsessed with the Beatles. That was a Beatles thing. I wanted to play one thing. It's a Christian group called Apologetics, and they do a pretty good cover of Love Me Do, except it's called Love the Jews. All the lyrics are changed, but the music is pretty well done. Just go ahead and hit play on it.
That's weird.
There we go.
Jews, whoa, love the Jews.
about it.
When I
about it.
When I
about it.
When I
about it.
When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. Where I stop and I turn and I go for a ride till I get to the bottom and I see you again.
See you again. Do you, don't you, want me to love you? I'm coming down fast, but I'm miles above you. Tell me, tell me, tell me, come on, tell me the answer. Well, you may be a lover, but you ain't no dancer. Look out now, helter skelter, helter skelter, helter skelter.
About it. Yiddish about it.
Yiddish about it. Do you, don't you want me to make you?
Yiddish about it. Yiddish about it.
I'm coming down fast, but don't let me break you.
Yiddish about it.
Yeah, tell me, tell me, tell me. Come on, tell me the answer. Well, you may be a lover, but you ain't no dancer. Look out now.
Helter skelter. Helter skelter. Helter skelter. When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. Where I stop and I turn and I go for a ride. Till I get to the bottom and I see you again. Do you, don't you want me to love you? I'm coming down fast, but I'm miles above you. Tell me, tell me, tell me. Come on, tell me the answer. Well, you may be a lover, but you ain't no dancer.
Look out now.
Helter skelter.
Helter skelter.
Helter skelter.
And next up here, oh, I sound so bassy. Hello, hello, that's better.
I usually turn it up a little bit when I'm on, so it makes me sound more DJ and macho.
Well, the next thing I want to play is from the very first album by George Carlin. It's called An Evening with Carlin and Burns. Burns and Carlin, yeah. It was released by Playboy Records in 1960, and I pulled it off of a WFMU blog site. Didn't I give you that?
Is that the, what's it called?
Which show is that?
On WFMU.
It was from the Beware of the Blog page.
Oh, okay.
When they did a feature on the early Carlin.
Yes, yes, I remember that. I still have it bookmarked.
Anyway, this is my favorite track from their first album. It's them doing a kiddie show. It's called Captain Jack and Jolly George.
God, who did that first?
There's another type of television show that comes on your screen every afternoon. It's directed primarily toward the children. And they call them, of course, kiddie shows. People come out with, you know, insipid sayings and funny hats. We'd like to give you our version of a children's show for hip kiddies. And we call it Captain Jack and Jolly George.
Hi, kids. It's time for Captain Jack. That's me.
And Jolly George. That's me.
Hey, what a show we got for you today.
Oh, boy, we always have a good show for you, don't we, kids? It's not like watching that square old Miss Dingling or anything like that, huh?
Hey, kids. Kids, remember yesterday on cartoon time, we left Clarabelle the Clown and Hermie the Hermaphrodite all hung up in the back room. You see, what they were trying to do, they tried to hide the booze before Clarabelle's mommy came in.
Yeah. Hey, now how about you kids out there? You managed to get the booze hidden before mommy staggers home? Oh, let's watch that now. Mommy don't want to see you getting smashed, too. I'll tell you what you do, kids. You watch and see where Daddy hides his booze, and then you put yours in the same place. And then if she finds it, he gets busted, not you. See?
Yeah. It's so much fun seeing Daddy get all hung up on
Yeah.
Hey, kids, today is absolutely the last day to send for your Captain Jack and Jolly George Jr. junkie kit. You've got to have this kit.
Oh, boy. You've got to have it. And why is this the last day? I'll tell you why, kids. We were down at Tijuana, and our dealer has been busted by the fuzz.
Yeah.
So we're running just a little short of the stuff, kids, I tell you.
Now, of course, this is pure heroin you get. I mean pure heroin. No milk, sugar, no preservative, no flour added.
Oh,
it is dynamite.
I'll tell you, kids. Captain Jack and I shared a half a bag, shot it up just before the show. I'll tell you, I'm twisted, kids. Look at my eyes, huh? One taste, kids, and I'm stoned.
Now, of course, in the kit, you also get a U.S. Army Surplus 12cc hypodermic needle.
That's right. And you get a genuine Roger Silverware 1812 bent spoon. Yeah, that's to mix the fix, kids. And that spoon, yeah, hey, he knows, huh? Sure thing. And I'll tell you what, kids, that spoon is available in modern, traditional, provincial, or rosemead.
Yeah.
Make sure you specify which pattern you want when you send it, kid.
And, of course, you get 3,669 feet of rubber tubing to wrap around your arm, get that vein popping out there.
That's it out there. boy. Yeah. Hey, not only that, kid, you know what else you get? You get a 30-day supply of cotton to keep the spike clean. You know, don't want to get an abscess vein. You know, Captain Jack, we had a lot of letters from kids. They're shooting up with a dirty spike, and they're getting an abscess vein.
Oh,
now, kids, I'll tell you what you do. You keep that spike clean. And when you see that big bluish-purple splotch creeping up your arm, kid, it's time to switch to the main vein. Right back there, kid. That's it, kid. Oh, that's a wonderful spot.
Now, for the first 250 kids that send in for their kit, you're going to get a bonus, and that bonus is...
a genuine 8x10 autographed glossy picture of Alexander King.
Yeah!
Yeah!
You hang it right beside Mummy's picture.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here, for your kit, you send to Captain Jack and Jolly George, care of Pusher, Hollywood 28, California.
In New York, call Withdrawal Symptoms 58964.
Okay, kids, it's time for milk. Milk drinking time on the Captain Jack and Jolly George show.
Gotta drink your milk with us, kids.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's good. Now, don't forget, kids, you never outgrow your need for milk. You keep asking Mommy for milk. It's amber-colored, and it comes in a tall brown bottle with a picture of a white horsey on it.
Yeah. You love it. You love it. Hey, kids, this is for the little girls.
Uh-oh.
Little boys, out of the room.
Little girls only.
That's right. Today is your next to last day to send for your Lolita kit.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm.
You see, in this kit, you get, of course, an autographed picture of Vladimir Nabokov and the original Lolita.
Hey, yeah, and I'll tell you, also get a little instruction booklet in there, girls. And you know something? If you girls read those instructions and do the exercises prescribed, that's kind of fun in itself, girls. I'll tell you what, in just 2 weeks, you'll be walking and talking and acting like girls twice your age. And you can pick up a little cash after school.
You know? Yeah! Why not? Okay, kids, as we do every day, we want to leave you with our thought for the day. Above all,
don't forget to pray.
Hi, kitty.
That's, you know, for 1960, that's scary stuff.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Which makes it great. I was saying to Ben, I said, I wonder if Lenny Bruce heard any of that. And he said, well, they heard Lenny. And that's true. You can hear that going right through. You can hear that going all through there. Did you ever see the Actor's Studio with George Carlin?
I have, yes.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
But that WFMU blog article had lots of clips from the early days.
Yeah.
And my earliest memory of Carlin is around 64, recording him probably 65. I had a tape recorder, a reel-to-reel.
I was 2 years old, Bennett.
I'm older than you, Greg, and I recorded Carlin on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Wow!
And he came on with a suit and tie and short hair.
Yeah,
and he did the astronaut bit, and I Want My Crayons, and he also did some radio bits.
Oh, okay.
From Sedges to St. Joe.
Yeah,
and stuff which he was still doing when he transformed into the hippie comedian.
Yeah, because I have that. What's that called? That's a real early George Carlin album. I don't know if it came. It probably wasn't out when he was first doing it, but it looks to me like it was something that. Killer Carlin. When did that come out?
I don't remember.
Okay, that was a pre hippie comedian or just changing into. And then I've got one before that one that's just called material before it called the early George Carlin. I believe it has like an orange or red cover with a picture of him.
That's
on it.
A reissue of a couple of earlier.
Yeah. And it's not uproariously funny, but I got it to complete a collection, and also because the history of this is interesting. Did you ever hear this show where I had Joe Osterley on, and all we did was play comedy the whole time?
I did not.
We played comedy records, and we talked about comedy, and we talked about why, because he does stand up too. So we talked about why it was important, who we liked, different things. We played Derek and Clive, Monty Python, Coyle and Sharp, all kinds of stuff.
Coyle and Sharp. God, I love those.
Classics in a bunch of. I've had some Mr. Mike that I had off of different things. I have found a Mondo Video one sheet a few months ago. I got to get it framed.
Uh huh. Of Mr. Mike?
Yeah, Mr. Mike's Mondo Video. Remember that? You've seen that movie, right?
I saw the movie in a theater in New York.
Wow. Historic comedy.
I actually was in a club in 79. And Michael O'Donohue walked in, and I kind of freaked out.
Yeah.
Michael O'Donohue!
Yeah.
Staring at me like, what, so? And I had nothing to say. I just was blown away because he was, you know, ethereal or something to me at the time. I thought what he did took comedy to that whole other level that you
have
to think about.
Yeah, all the way from Phoebe Zeitgeist all the way up to whatever the hell he was doing when he died. I can't remember. I think he had just finished working on – he had co-written Scrooged, I think, the Bill Murray thing.
Really?
Yeah, he wrote the script for that.
Really? Wow.
I think he might have disowned it, but I believe
– I actually – At one time, really enjoyed that film. This winter, it was on AMC like 60 times in 2 weeks. So I didn't care anymore. But the first time I watched it, I actually thought that film was kind of nice.
And he appeared in Annie Hall, I think it was. Manhattan. Standing out in front of a theater. Anyway.
I have a Carlin thing. Everybody's heard this, but it's only 3 minutes long. And it was listed as Final Words for America.
Oh, that must be on a much later album.
I can't say when this was recorded, but you'll recognize it.
Yeah.
There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Hey, yeah.
Have you heard any Patton Oswalt?
I know of Patton Oswalt, yes.
Like I said, I grew up in Virginia. A few things I miss about Virginia. One was were the Tom Carvel ads on TV. I don't know if you remember who Tom Carvel was. Tom Carvel owned about a dozen shitball ice cream stores up and down the East Coast, and he did these TV ads. And he did his own voiceovers, and therein lay the tragedy of Tom Carvel. Because he had a voice that sounded like Tom Waits gargling chunks of hot asphalt like your spine would just turn into broken glass the second you heard it. Like, oh, my God, what the fuck? It's Tom Carvel on TV.
Hi, this is Tom Carvel from the Carvel Ice Cream Stores. Just in time for Father's Day, we have Fudgy the Whale. That's right, Fudgy the Whale is a six-layer ice cream cake, and he's made out of different ice cream flavors, bringing you Father's Day greetings from beyond the seven seas. And we'll write, "You're a whale of a dad," on the frosting color of your choice, Fudgy the Whale. And from outer space, we have Cookie Puss. That's right, Cookie Puss. He's an outer space alien, and he's not going to probe your rectum like the aliens in Whitley Strieber's Communion. It's safe to come in and pick up a Cookie Puss, bringing you holiday greetings from beyond the spiral galaxy.
And you could not cut those cakes with a fucking lightsaber. You would, like, pop, your dad would pop a shoulder out, you fucking bastards. Bullet stopping goodness from Tom Carvel for the most obscure holidays on the calendar. If only Lee Harvey Oswald had been carrying our delicious ice cream cakes when he was transferred from that prison in Dallas, Jack Ruby's bullets would have been stopped cold by the delicious frosting and ice cream wonderfulness in the middle of our cakes. So pick up our new lime-flavored grassy knoll ice cream cake. That's right, it's a delicious grassy knoll, and there's little licorice CIA men pulling the trigger on JFK as he rides by in a delicious marzipan limousine. Tom Carvel only had three pans. And depending on the way he turned the pan, that's what the mold was. So the Fudgy the Whale pan, he would turn it like vertically, and that would kind of turn into Santa's head. But not really, because it looked all bulgy and fucked up, like someone had beaten him up or something. Santa was giving someone the hairy eyeball at the local tavern, and they don't take kindly to queers. They dragged him out back and worked him over with lead pipes. Gave him a big old blanket party for an hour. That's our Kris Kringle pummeled cake. That's right, Kris Kringle. He's been pummeled, and that's he can't remember whether you've been naughty or nice. And that's real raspberry preserves coming out of his nostrils and ear holes. Boy, they really tuned him up there. And he would turn it the other way, and it kind of looked like a leprechaun, but the legs were all stunted and broken and fucked up. And for just in time for St. Patty's Day, it's Patio Cripply. That's right, Patio Cripply. His legs are stunted and broken, and you can catch him easy. He'll lead you right to his pot of gold. Bad news for him, but good news for you. Patio Cripply wishing you top of the morning as he drags himself along the forest floor. How do I pay for all that expensive food? Doing Punch Up by Punch Up Movies in Hollywood. Punch Up is where they have a script for a movie that hasn't been shot, and a bunch of writers and comedians sit around the table, and they punch it up. They make it better. They go, here, add a joke here, add a joke there. Move this scene. Cut this scene. This should be at the end. This should be at the beginning. And you tighten the script up, and you get it ready to go. And it's really fun. You hang out with your friends. It's a lot of fun. But lately, I've been doing Punch Up on all these computer-animated movies, and what they don't tell you is those movies are 80% done when they bring you in. The movie's finished. So when you start saying, well, that opening scene's too long, I'd shorten, they go, whoa, hold on. We just spent $140 million on this. We're not changing anything. And then you say, what exactly do you want me to do? And they go, we need you to think up funny jokes that people off screen can yell over the unfunny, uninteresting action to make it a comedy. I didn't know you could make comedies that way. I didn't know you could take sad, boring footage and then have people just yell jokes over it. Like, can you take Super 8 footage of a kid's birthday party and none of the other kids the invited showed up and he's all alone with his little hat to the side and this sad little cake in the kitchen? I know it's awful, but then you have a guy off screen go, I just fell on my bottom into some butterscotch. And you go, wow, someone who I can't see, nor will I ever see, just fell into some butterscotch and is talking out loud about it the way nobody does. This is hilarious. Or you like just show Auschwitz footage of a guy going, I haven't seen this many ribs since I was at Tony Roma's. Whackety smackety doo. Or just show the World Trade Center collapsing. Eighth floor, men's shoes. Seventh floor, lingerie. Whackety smackety doo.
I'm having a party, you can't see.
Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, I told Ben I thought you'd like that since we were just talking about Mr. Mike and his effect on comedy. I heard Mr. Mike in there. I heard Bill Hicks in there. I heard all the way back to Lenny and the whole tradition of court jesters and people that are there to tell the truth in the guise of jokes.
And to be punished for it, too.
He hasn't been punished yet.
Well, but some of them have.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is that Carlin and Richard Pryor and Lenny and people like that and even Bill Hicks to some extent have been paving that road for years. So people like, you know, Sarah Silverman and David Cross and Patton Oswalt can do these things.
Well, the time that interests me about Carlin now is the 80s when he sort of was, I don't know, irrelevant or something for a few years.
He was, and then did you notice when...
Didn't he start doing his HBO specials in
the 80s? He started doing his HBO specials in 81, really early on. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed is that when Sam Kinison got popular, Carlin started yelling a lot.
Oh.
And I didn't think that was Carlin until he...
That's what I'm interested in that, yeah.
And then after a while, Carlin found his groove again.
I went to high school with Sam Kinison.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In Dallas, in Texas?
No, he went to East Peoria High School.
Really?
He was in eighth grade and his freshman year at East Peoria.
Okay, because for some reason I thought he's from Texas, but I think he went there to Austin or somewhere to start doing his act. I saw him in L.A. at an afternoon matinee at the Comedy Store with four other people one time. Before
really?
Anybody knew who the hell he was, I just thought, I think I'll go to the Comedy Store because I had nothing to do.
Uh-huh.
And
do you remember
yes,
when this was?
Oh, it was like a year before he really hit.
So 84, 85?
Something like that. I mean, I was still in college and I just thought, oh, what the hell? Or I just graduated. And for some reason, I thought, oh, look, the world-famous Comedy Store. It's open. I'll go in and see what's going on. And it was daylight. I remember daylight streaming in through the windows of the bar and Sam Kinison standing there and doing his act and doing his the licking the alphabet thing. And that was a revelation to me at the time.
My first visit to L.A. back in 77, I hit a couple of the comedy clubs because that's what the people went to, so... I saw some early things then. I saw the Unknown Comic, and that was even before he was doing the Gong Show or anything. So
one thing really amazing that happened is my friend Scott was writing a story on Carlin. They got us front row seats at the Comedy Store when he was working out his HBO stuff.
Oh,
so I basically sat on the edge of the stage, and Carlin was about 3 feet from me, yelling at me at one point.
That's
which was pretty amazing,
astonishing. That's
yeah,
just astonishing.
Yeah.
Wow.
I also saw him at the Wiltern once. And I saw Damon Wayans at the Wiltern when he was still doing stand up, which he was very good
when
at.
He was funny, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that's what he should have stuck with.
Uh-huh. I agree. But Major Payne's was pretty funny.
Yes, I never saw Major Payne.
Wow. Comedy.
It's
well,
it's important. Yeah, you make
it
a joke,
is important.
But it's an important part. I mean, well, shit, where do most people get their news from now? From a comedy show.
They do, yeah.
And I'm not saying that to be pissed off. I think that's great.
For the last 4 years, I've had people say to me, the people who actually mainly listen to my news program, they listen to Jon Stewart.
Yeah, Stewart and Colbert.
Colbert, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I've had people say... I like to listen to you because otherwise the only way I get my news is from Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
So I know. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. I don't think Stewart would regard that as a good thing, that people listen to him for the news.
I don't think he would either.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I say I think it's a good thing is because they're getting it somewhere,
yeah,
and they're getting it cynically,
yeah,
which is good.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to understand what's going on with the politics to make it be funny. You can't not you have to have the background of the joke, which they will background you a little bit,
mm-hmm,
but they don't pander to it. It's, as far as I can tell, either that or I'm just stupid. But they seem to be very good at keeping it at a level where you should be somewhat conversant with the democratic process, mm-hmm. with the present major players in the game and some of their history and some of history itself. And if you do, the jokes, a lot more of them make sense.
They do. They do. I don't know. I find it... I spend so much time, I'm a news junkie, so I spend so much time listening to podcasts and watching news shows. For instance, I was utterly shocked on Friday night when Keith Olbermann announced that it was his final show.
I heard about that.
He left MSNBC on Friday night.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was...
I was just watching that document, the 10th and 11th inning, the Ken Burns continuation of his baseball.
Uh-huh.
He did two more, and Olbermann's in that.
Yeah, he would be. He's a big, big baseball buff.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna miss Keith, but I also know that
where's he going?
I'm sure for a couple years he's got a contract with MSNBC, so he won't be doing anything for a couple years.
Oh, so he
on television? He quit.
So there wasn't any backstory of...
Well, they took him off the air about a month ago because he had given money.
Yeah, yeah.
It is my understanding that he actually gave money to Congresswoman Giffords.
Really?
That may be incorrect. I could be incorrect on that. But it was a southern, Arizona congressperson that he gave money to, and they took him off MSNBC for that. They suspended him for that.
I don't see how that's a problem.
Well, because MSNBC still maintains that they're a news program.
I can see how it would ostensibly be a problem, but I don't see how it would be a practical problem because they did it because they're a big corporation. There could be the appearance that he's going to let it affect his reporting, whereas I don't think if somebody's intelligent enough, it shouldn't. And if you watch what they do and what they say, it shouldn't. I was defending, of all people, Richard Dolan, if you know who that is, against people because he was, I don't know if he was promoting, but he was reporting on some sort of contactee-ish type thing, some channeling person.
Remind me again, who's Richard Dolan?
He wrote UFOs in the National Security State.
Okay.
And part two just came out late last year. I will see him in a couple of months in Albuquerque so I can talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
But people said, well, we can't trust anything he says anymore because he's talking to these Chandler Space Brother people.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot back, why does it make any difference? If you can look at his research and you can't find any holes in it, who gives a fuck what he's interested in or what he talks about or who he talks to? How does that affect his integrity with regards to, like, is that because now you can't trust him to give you the straight...
Because he talks to Chandlers?
Yes. Or takes any stock in what they say. I don't know if he did or not. I don't give a shit whether he takes stock in what, or anybody for that matter. If their information, their research holds up on its own and to me appears to be honest and accurate, who cares? You know? And I don't think I'd draw the line at anything. I mean, I don't know. Maybe if it was discovered they were in the KKK or something. But still, you could listen to the news and figure, it's very easy, especially with a stupid person, to figure out they're slanting there.
In the 90s, we had a KKKer, David Duke, was that his name?
Yes, yes, running for Congress.
I thought he was an intelligent man. I didn't mind listening to him.
Right.
I didn't care for his beliefs, but I didn't mind listening to him because he presented them well.
Yeah, I'm not going to vote for him, but who gives a shit?
Yeah, and that's freedom of
speech. Yeah, people have this problem with being unsure. Yeah, like Carlin said, some people think if you say something, it might happen.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are really fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. That was his line.
Well, you were hitting a lot last week about belief systems. What is this thing about belief systems that you have?
Belief systems initials are BS. So
I like that.
Well, that's from Robert Anton Wilson.
Uh-huh.
It's no coincidence that the initials for belief system are BS. I don't have a problem with a belief system. What I have a problem with is if somebody tries to push their belief system on me or other people and say that they're right and other people are not, or they're more right than somebody else. That usually pisses me off.
I guess it would have to depend upon the subject.
Yeah, I guess so.
There are things that, there are...
I don't get up and start waving flags and get mad.
One of the things that happens in the media is there's a lot of talk about the two sides of everything, and a lot of things don't have two sides.
Yeah, there's hundreds of sides.
Yeah.
or an infinite number of sides. Let's see, John Shirley, if you know who he is, he's a very skeptical person because he was really into the UFO thing for a while, and all he saw was bullshit, and all he saw was idiots, a lot of the loudest ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave up on it, said, I think, if I'm not taking him out of context, he said, well, this is all shit, and there's nothing you can trust here, so, you know, can't trust anything. And to me, that's you have to have a mind that takes each case on its own merits, and is also equally important, willing to not make a decision, willing to remain agnostic. That is the most important thing to me, that to listen and remain agnostic. In fact, I just brought this up on the show. I was just on Micah Hank's show from South Carolina. That was if anybody's there who was listening to that show is still listening to this show, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
On killradio.org. This is Radio Mysterioso. I'm talking with Bennett here, one of the other hosts, DJs, and the guy that got me on this station, actually, over 10 years ago.
But we've hit interesting subject. Go ahead.
But he said, well, we don't got much time left for you. You have to leave. What would you like to say? I was like, what? Oh, well, okay. I'll say, if you're interested in these weird things, doubt is the first word that should be in your mind, and the second thing that should be in your mind is, but listen with an open mind. And thirdly, and the third thing, do not be afraid to remain uncommitted or agnostic or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I am interested and remain interested and don't believe almost anything in that field. Contrary to what some people think about me, I don't take stock in rock bottom reality, because you can't make that determination. There's no way to do it. All you're working with is people's perceptions.
Well, I've reached a point where, for me, things like the paranormal, UFOs, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, all that stuff, I don't find that very relevant anymore.
Yeah, well, it isn't for most people, and it shouldn't have to be. I still do.
But at the same time, but I love the stories. As a matter of fact, what I put in here was William Gill's story, him talking about it.
I have that, and I have played it on my show.
I'm sure you
have.
Does
he say, I'm the chap what saw the...
Yes, that's it.
Okay.
That's the one.
I have Herbert Shermer, too. That's fascinating.
But there are plenty of things that belief systems get in the way of, and I'm talking about things like the anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the people who deny HIV.
You know?
And when you get more political, I'm talking about the global warming deniers, things like that.
Yeah, but I haven't made up my mind about any of those things. So I try to listen to the people
on
with
science.
Basically,
there's no statistical evidence that shows that vaccinations lead to autism. There's no evidence of that. So what are the
proponents of that theory holding up? Are they holding up anything, like a study or anything?
The people who believe that...
Yes.
What is it?
I can't remember the actress's name that's all into that
right now.
Jenny
McCarthy.
Okay.
Andrew, what's his name? Wakefield, who wrote the major document that became the anti-vaxxers' Bible.
Yeah.
All of the people who were his co-signers of that article through the early part of the last decade, they withdrew their names. Then Nature magazine announced that the article was so completely discredited that it was the same thing as tearing it out of the magazine and throwing it away. And then earlier last year, the British Society, I don't know how.
The Royal Society?
The Royal Society.
Who just did a huge
doctorate away from it.
Really? They just did a huge issue on extraterrestrial life. The Royal Society of Philosophical something of science.
But Wakefield has been completely discredited. He's had his doctorate taken away from him. And yet there are still true believers who say, no. There's truth to this. It's absolutely sure.
Well, there's two sides to that. The strong side is he's wrong. And the weak side is he's not totally wrong, and people don't
want to know that. And to just believe things because we want to believe them. That harms people. I mean, the Jenny McCarthy.
I'm going to go with the thing that seems to have the most evidence for it that seems reasonable, well, at least until something comes along to change my mind. That's how I feel about it.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm fairly certain that vaccinations are pretty benign, most of them.
Well, they can,
but I've got a little.
Be very strong.
Yeah,
too.
I've got a little tiny space in my brain for the conspiracy part of it. Well, to pay attention to it, and I don't shut it off.
But let's also remember, and this is important because this contradicts what I just said, that the three major things that kill people in the United States are cancer, heart disease, and health care. That more people die of hospital accidents and mistakes than are killed by anything other than cancer and heart disease. More than murder, more than car accidents, you know? So, I mean, anything can happen. So you have to have an open mind there, too.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, statistically, there's no evidence. And
Jim Keith, for example.
Seriously bugs me are the HIV deniers. Because, again, this kills people. When they say the medications for AIDS, that kills you. It doesn't kill you. But if your body is already weakened from the disease, perhaps you can die. You know? Nothing's going to last forever. Nothing's going to save you
eternally. You mean HIV deniers saying that HIV is not the cause of AIDS?
Right.
Okay.
They just say flat out, it's not the cause. And the person they follow is Peter Duisberg, who is still holding on to the same things that he was saying in 1987.
Yeah.
Even though every single thing that he stated then has been proven incorrect. He says that it's impossible for us to isolate HIV. They've photographed it. They've isolated and photographed it. Now, I'm lucky because I'm not in a sexual environment where it's likely I'm going to get AIDS. Okay.
And I will give a caveat here. I'm not going to argue with you on things that I don't know that much about.
Well, I will. But I find that more important because generally, I think it's ridiculous to say about UFOs that it is 100% impossible for aliens to come to Earth.
No, it's not. Of course it isn't.
But it is possible to say that it's 99% pretty unlikely that there are aliens coming to Earth.
That is possible to be said, too.
Yeah.
I would agree with you there. It's not an impossibility.
It's definitely not
It's got a high degree of improbability.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is a high, to my mind, and this enters into beliefs, there is a high degree of probability that something that is not human has been interacting with us for thousands, maybe more than thousands of years. And
do you have any evidence on that? Anything that story?
Yeah, yeah, hundreds of thousands of witnesses over thousands of years.
Hmm.
So it either means everybody's completely deluded, or there's something else besides. I'm trying to think of a specific. I have talked to classically trained medical and psychological doctorate level people that have said, yes, some of these things we can't explain as people making stuff up or having stuff coming out of their minds because there's no way they could have known certain things. And I will accept that. I won't accept it 100%, but I accept it as a working hypothesis at the moment until I find out something different. And I don't know, I think it's going to be my working hypothesis for the rest of my life.
That's acceptable.
Yeah.
Well,
I will not discount it. But I'm not going to jump in whole hog and say there's aliens here and they're coring out people's asses and whatever.
Well, but there's also things like the DSM-4, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which is primarily used by insurance companies to define mental illnesses.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are a bunch of things in there that even I, standing outside of that field, I find it highly unlikely that some of these things are worth being considered as diseases.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of psychologists or psychiatrists, which makes them scientific people who believe in them. I don't believe in dissociative identity, for instance.
Just because something says it's science doesn't mean that it's something that's absolute. Because new information becomes available. And scientists are people, and they have opinions. And their opinions affect how they look at the data, how they present the data.
But, of course, the thing about science, the idea of science,
that's what peer review is
for. It goes beyond personal opinion. If a study can be replicated, say, or something like that, which is...
Well, there are many scientists that refuse to replicate parapsychology experiments, yet...
Because they can't, basically.
No, there are many that refuse to do it because they say there's nothing there to test.
But that presents a problem because then they can't be taken seriously.
Of course.
Because if it was replicated, then there could be something that was
observable. Well, then you get to the problem of some people replicate it, and then there's an argument over the methodology.
Then it's not real science if there's an argument about the methodology. Then more needs to be done to answer that.
Yeah.
The
well,
problem is that what we do see in millions of Zener card tests, say, and this has been done, the PAIR, Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research, and other people have done this. They've done millions of tests, and they find slight statistical significance.
Yeah.
But the statistical significance is so slight, it doesn't prove anything paranormal.
Yes, but in specific instances with different people. That is over a long time with people that have no special ability or claim any special ability, or neither do the people conducting the test.
Well, there are some thing nobody could say that's not science. They were doing real
of
science.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and then you have to admit that there's something that's not accounted for with presence physics to account for people either guessing things right or affecting. They do the things with dropping marbles or whatever, affecting a random number generator or whatever. There was definitely something there, and you can't say that it's not. You can say if you're a certain group of people that yeah, it's there, but it's not really that important. Are not statistically significant because we can't really do anything with it.
Right. Which becomes the question of relevance. That's what I mean by irrelevant. I don't mean to say that it shouldn't be studied or that people shouldn't focus on it. That's fine with me. It doesn't bother me. But for me, it's at generally resolved.
Have you ever had anything happen to you that where you said, I don't know how I could have known that?
Oh, sure.
What is your explanation for it? Chance?
I used to, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I used to take significance from that. But now I do, there's actually a word for it. Coincidence.
Yes.
And I don't know what more significance to give it than that.
Right.
Certainly when I go to the phone. This happened to me when I was 20 once. I'm sure it's happened to you many times. Yeah, I go to my phone. My girlfriend and I had a big fight. I'd left her.
Yes, this is a normal thing that happens to everybody.
I go to pick up the phone, and she's on the phone.
Oh, that happens all the time to a lot of people.
Because
I would call that
thinking about it at the same time.
I would call that coincidence. Mm-hmm. When I'm driving down the street, remember I used to live on that other larger apartment up Genesee with Leah?
Sure.
We came home from a trip once. And as we turned the corner at the top of the street at Melrose, I thought, there is a package for me. It's in black plastic, and it's inside the house behind the front door. And when I opened the door, I fully expected to see that, and I did. How did that package get inside the house? Then later, you know, I talked to Scott Lindgren, and he said, oh, yeah, I left that for you. He didn't leave me a message about it. He said nothing about it to me beforehand. But I saw in my mind's eye that package sitting there behind the door in exactly the place that I had flashed on it in my mind. And I wasn't thinking about it beforehand or anything like that. Suddenly, for some reason, when we turned the corner, bam, I said, my mind told me there's going to be something there. And that's the only time something like that's happened.
Okay.
It's really hard to put that down to coincidence. Out of all things, to find a black package inside the house. I said, how'd you get it in there? He said, I actually flattened it and pushed it under the weather strip. So it was possible for him to do it. But the impossible thing was, how did I know that was going to happen? The other thing is, I did an experiment with Jeremy one time.
The drawing experiment.
Yeah. And he guessed what I had hidden. Out of the thousands of things in the apartment, and I just said, I'm going to hide something. You tell me what it is later by writing it down and showing me the picture before I tell you. And he got it exactly right.
Amazing. Amazing.
And to compound things, I got the thing he got. I said it was a round thing attached to a sphere attached to another, like a cylindrical thing, and it was brightly colored. It was a Pez dispenser with Miss Piggy's head on it.
Uh-huh.
Out of the thousands of things in his house, I'd figure that's fairly close. But he got it exactly right. Amazing. So how many coincidences do I need in my life before I think there might be some sort of mechanism whereby...
To make that useful, it needs to happen on command.
Yes, true.
You know, to make it useful.
Yeah.
No denying things like that happen. And,
okay.
And yet, it probably is some form of coincidence or something, but yeah.
Well, the minute you put that label on it, you demean it down to something that has no significance to me.
Yeah, but I'm sure there have also been times like you thought something would appear and it didn't happen, and of course you forget that. The moment that it doesn't happen, it goes away.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I'll admit it, of course. Yeah, that happens to everyone.
Hey,
anyway,
here's something I wanted to talk to you about.
Making it relevant is what interests me.
Okay. Well, here's something that has to do with a certain relevance. In the last 10 years, we've seen a growth of an actual skeptical movement that wasn't there in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it's primarily relates through podcasts and things like that.
There's a good one called Skeptico that I like.
You know, I think he's kind of nuts.
Really?
I've listened to many.
Really? I like that show. The one I've heard like two or three of them.
He
must be nuts because I like him.
Well, he did a psychic detective one what's his name? Ben Rafferty. And it was really kind of frustrating listening to what's his name? Nikolai? What's his name? Alexis?
I don't know.
Alexis? I think his name's Alexis.
What, being the host?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm Skeptico.
I think you're right.
But I've listened to that for like 5 years. I've listened to many of his things because I'm trying to find other sides. But what I'm saying is that in the for the longest time, there was a question of was there going to be a younger generation of skeptics because, you know, James Randi's like 85 or something like that, and Martin Gardner was 90-something, and he just died. And he's the guy who basically created the movement, you know.
Nothing nice to say about either of those gentlemen.
Martin Gardner is a genius.
I think he's a genius, but I also think he's extremely biased.
Oh, well.
And closed-minded.
I think he's extremely open-minded, but I'm not going to argue that right now.
Whatever.
But the thing is, and the same with Randi, I think he's very open-minded. I think the picture that's painted of him by true believers is not the guy that I see.
But well, whatever. Then I must be a true believer then, in spite of what I just told you.
But the thing is that there seems to be a younger generation
that's coming along.
That the Mythbusters do that.
Yeah.
The reality check guys from Ottawa.
Yeah.
Didn't you say that you were on that show?
No.
Okay. Then it must have been another skeptical show that you did sometime. But and I enjoy a lot of these. Actually, my favorite is not the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. It's the Skepticality Show, because Swoopy and Derek bring on people who actually say very thoughtful things.
Right.
And it really just appeals to me because it really makes me think of what we can do in the future. You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm interested in that. But what I'm finding, I just was listening to that Nick Pope MUFON show.
Yeah.
And there was a general talk in there about MUFON is having the skeptics problem of a few years ago, that it's all a bunch of old guys in their 50s and 60s.
Yeah. No, older.
Older. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, if you ever go to any of those Nazi, the pro-Nazi things,
they're almost
those
dead.
Guys are like 90.
Yeah.
And is there a younger generation?
I was going to say good riddance, but you know what? I don't care if there's Nazis around. I don't give a shit.
Well, neither do I. I don't really like those guys. David Urban.
I don't like them, but I don't care.
Doesn't bother me.
I'm glad they're around to laugh at.
Yeah. But is there a younger generation of I don't want to call them true believers, but of people who want to carry the fire for UFOs, for the paranormal?
Yeah, I think I've been painted as one of those people, along with Nick and Nick Pope, actually. Mm-hmm. Nick Redfern, all the Nicks, Paul Kimball, Mac before he died. This guy who was on, whose show I was on today, Micah Hanks.
Uh-huh.
I think that they're a little bit more circumspect and probably closer to the skeptics. I don't know about the skeptic community, but I think they're moving more towards a centrist view rather than a true believer view. At least the people I know of. I mean, Nick Redford and I are like almost identical in our viewpoints on things. And it's basically, like I said, remain doubtful but keep an open mind. Mm-hmm. And I just like the possibility, the strong possibility in some cases, that something very strange that is that makes no sense whatsoever occurs occasionally in our world, in our reality. I mean, I like that possibility. It gives me hope and makes me happy. I don't know if that makes me a true believer. It just makes me an interested person, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm more of, and if you know the term, and I sure you do, I'm more of a, what's the word? I'm more of a Pyrrhonist.
A Pyrrhonist?
Yes, than a skeptic, I think. I'm of the Pyrrhonist school of skepticism, which says that nothing can be said for sure about anything. So the highest form of Pyrrhonism is to keep an open mind about remain uncommitted about everything while you still listen, take in information, and maybe try to work towards some sort of certainty, knowing that you will probably never get there. You might get close once in a while, but you're never going to be 100% certain. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not 100% certain about anything except for maybe moral questions like killing and stealing and things like that.
Well, and you could probably find justifications for them, too, if you were put in the position of finding justification.
Yeah, if somebody's attacking my wife and me, and there's no question about I will die if they don't. If they don't die, I'll kill them.
Well,
if I have the way to do it, I'll do it. I'm not just going to sit there and die.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still wrong.
Even though you think you know it's wrong. Yeah,
it's still wrong, but I probably feel like shit about it for the rest of my life. Even if they were insane homicidal maniac. I would probably feel bad about it. Maybe I wouldn't. I don't know, but it would probably bother me.
It would probably bother me.
Because one of my friends, he told me that a friend of his was coming home from a gun range, and he had a loaded gun underneath his seat, and he was carjacked. So as he's pretending to pick his keys up off the floor, he grabs his 9mm automatic, pulls it out, and shoots the guy in the chest. Got a knife or a gun at him and wanted to take his car. The guy dropped dead immediately. The guy went to therapy for 2 years to get over it, and it still bothers him. Just because the guy was trying to take his car and had a gun to his head and he shot him, that bothered him. I think that's amazing because I've never been in that. So until you're in the situation, you don't know.
Did he have the gun in the car for a thing like that?
No, he was at the gun range.
So he was just happened to have the gun.
And he had it underneath the seat. Illegally loaded, actually, because you're supposed to have the bullets in one place and the gun in another.
Yeah.
So they're not together. Anyway, he had it loaded under the seat. He didn't get in any trouble. The cops, like, you were totally justified. And he was let off scot-free. But the guy, and he didn't even know it would happen. He just started feeling bad about it to the point of it really bothering him.
Well, I once met a guy who was the only survivor of a building fire.
Yeah.
And like 11 or 12 people in the building were killed in the fire, and he had climbed up to the roof and was able to jump across to another roof.
Yeah.
And he survived. And that incident destroyed his life. He spent the rest of his life just feeling
guilty.
Destroyed, guilty, yeah. His girlfriend had been killed, you know, or his wife, whatever it was.
There was a good film about that. Remember that? What was it called? It was Jeff Bridges, but he was
fearless.
The only survivor from an airplane crash.
Yeah. Actually, that's a brilliant film.
It is. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges.
But that same kind of issue. I guess we got off the skeptical thing.
Skepticism or whatever is just about the way you deal with life. You know, I said my story based on your story because. Things like, you know, life-changing incidents are life-changing. I mean,
yeah.
Even though, as a skeptic, I should say, well, come on, get over it. Come on.
Yeah, I don't call myself a skeptic or believer or anything. Labels piss me off for myself anyway.
But I don't – the label skeptic is generally negative for most people. And I happen
in this
to
country,
think,
yeah.
I happen to think that being skeptical is a good thing.
Yeah, but people have different – you know, there's not a definition that everybody carries around that's the same definition of that word.
I suppose, but I'm not too worried about
it. See, when somebody says, I'm a skeptic and I'm proud of it, I immediately think, you close-minded asshole. But if somebody says, I'm generally skeptical about certain claims, then I have a little bit more I'm a little bit more apt to talk to them. Well, because I know that they're reasonable.
The attitude that skeptics are enemies, and I find that pretty useless. Because yeah. I don't regard the only people I don't like are deniers, like the people that I mentioned earlier, the people who deny HIV, the people who deny vaccinations, the people who deny global warming. That denial is the thing that bothers me.
Yeah.
You know, it's different for me. And
oh, I'm just going to go on. The only way I have of knowing if people are listening and having them react to anything I'm saying is Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Actually.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that.
You probably
want to play something?
That I put up a line about Facebook the other day.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah. I'm going to play another Beatle-oriented thing. It's only 2 minutes long.
Okay.
This is called Norwegian Weed. And it's a mutation of Norwegian wood. You got to listen close to it, though.
Credible witnesses we interviewed was an Australian minister, the Reverend William Gill, posted before the time of his sighting to the Anglican mission in Boinai, Papua New Guinea. One night at 7:45, as he stood with 38 other people at the edge of the mission playing field, every one of them saw the same thing.
Can you imagine what it's like to look up in the sky and see a totally foreign-looking object. They're just hovering, not very far high up, maybe 200 or 300 feet up in the air, and glowing, and two bipods jutting out from behind it, from underneath it, and sparkling all around, and some figures up there. This solid-looking object and figures walking about on top and not the slightest noise whatsoever. And so we waved. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get this object down onto the playing field? And as we waved, wondering whether we'd get some recognition and whether perhaps they would understand what we wanted, they waved back. So I asked a boy to go quickly down, bring me a torch, bring me a pencil, bring me paper, and return as quickly as he can so that I can get any other events that occur, minute-by-minute movements, so that at least we'd be able to talk about it the next day. And this he did, very, very quickly. He brought it back, and he brought the torch and put the torch on and shone it to the craft. And as he did so, he waved the, or moved the torch this way. And we were dumbfounded when we looked at the craft, and the craft was as though it was responding to the torch. It began to do this too, you know, like a disc-shaped object just moving the same way, responding to the movement of the torch. Next day, just prior to the evening service, about 7 o'clock, the thing was there again. It had arrived about an hour earlier, and we all decided to have the normal even song that we do have on those nights, because well, the thing was out there outside the church anyway, and we felt it wouldn't go away during the service, and it didn't. When we came out, there it was, still up in the sky. And so for another hour or two we watched, and then suddenly it did go, and there was this amazingly incredible speed that the whole craft disappeared to nothing across the bay in a matter of a second or so. Well now, what are we to think of this kind of phenomenon? People claiming to see things such as I did. There were 38 of us, and we all believe that we saw it, but of course we don't expect other people to believe us if they don't want to.
So that's Father William Gill talking about seeing occupants walking around on a craft floating in the air, and just granting that most people are not going to believe me, that's okay.
Yeah, I like people like that. It's like, look, this is what I saw. If you don't believe me, fine. What's funny is, and I believe that something actually happened to him, although I don't know what, is Travis Walton gets very upset when people don't believe him. He has been I think he stopped now, but for a while he was going to conventions complaining about people not believing him. It's like, well, it's a kind of a hard story for most people to believe. But the thing is that what he was angry with was like aggressive skepticism with him, at least what he thought was aggressive. I'm willing to listen to him.
So if one says to him, I'm sorry, I don't believe you.
No, I think he was more worried about public attacks, saying he was nuts or he was trying to make money or whatever.
I was just listening to This American Life this morning, and there, the most recent one, it's a great podcast. It's the most popular podcast in America. This American Life.
Yeah.
And
I told Bennett I stopped listening to him a long time ago because I found Ira Glass pompous.
Well, there was this woman was describing that when she was in grade school, and she's an adult now, H.R. Halderman came to her class to talk. And Halderman, of course, went to jail for Nixon and all that stuff.
I had one of his friends on my show a few months ago.
Jesus, cool. I didn't
Bob Emmenegger went to UCLA and was in the same fraternity but a different time. Uh-huh. He asked Emmenegger if he knows if he knew about any UFO stuff during the Nixon administration that came through the White House, and he told me Haldeman said yes, and I'm not talking about it anymore.
Well, all I wanted to bring up was this, that Haldeman liked talking. He was, according to this woman who saw him when she was much younger,
yeah,
he was nervous, and he was kind of shouted a lot.
Huh.
But nonetheless, what he wanted was to talk to people who had not already made up their minds about him, because he was part of the Nixon White House, and he went to prison.
Yeah.
What, it was 3 years or something?
Right,
but he went to prison. And that's an important thing, that, you know, because there was an audience that hadn't already prejudged him, even if they were a bunch of 8-year-olds.
Yeah. Oh, know? My God.
You know?
So one of the listeners, I don't have it. God damn it. But I do know where it is. The
Mexican mariachi band?
Doing a Beatles song, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had an interesting conversation with a friend from a few years ago. My friend Kim Wickwire is a chiropractor back in Peoria.
Yeah.
And he became a chiropractor because he was interested in medicine, but he also realized that he didn't really want to deal too much with death. And if he was going to be a doctor, people were going to die. Yeah. Whereas with a chiropractor, he's dealing with people's pains, and he can help them. So he approached chiropractic with that attitude.
Yeah.
And he's been a chiropractor back in Peoria, Illinois, since like 1980. He also taught anatomy for medical schools for a few years, so he has full practical background. Now, we've been friends since we were in second grade or something, so I've known him my whole life. However, when we were having conversations, my mom died in 2008, and I was home, and we had dinner together, and we were talking about some things, and he was expressing, he was saying that he accepted things like, he accepted the anti-vaxxers. Not that he disagreed, not that he believed that vaccines caused autism,
yeah.
But he knew that some people believed that.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to accept that belief. And he further went on to state that lots and lots of people in the world, more than half the world, believes in homeopathy.
Yeah.
Now, homeopathy, as far as I'm concerned, is junk. I'm not being closed-minded. It's junk. There's nothing to it. There's not another side that says, oh, it does work, that has any backing to it. And as a matter of fact, the homeopathic colleges in the UK are being closed slowly, you know, because there's no evidence for it. So when my friend is saying that if people want to believe in homeopathy, that's okay with me. Well, he's saying that as a chiropractor because even though he's a modern person, certain aspects of chiropractic are bullshit, too. Subluxations and all this stuff.
Certain aspects of allopathic medicine practiced in hospitals are bullshit.
That's why I said that
yes.
Healthcare is the third leading cause of death.
Yes.
But
chiropractic works for some people. I know many, many, many people that it works for.
My father went to a chiropractor all his life. All my life I watched.
And I don't know. If it's only mental, then it's fine. It works.
I don't have a problem with that. I still think that a doctor has a higher calling than to make people feel good, to tell them it's okay to go to homeopathic doctors who have no degrees, have no licenses.
Well, I've had doctors at Kaiser tell me if I would like, I should go to acupuncture.
Acupuncture is another one that I have problems with. I recognize that I recognize that
these
some
are
people
medical doctors with
say,
MDs have told me
this. However, if you get down to what acupuncture is, it's about something that doesn't exist, and that's chi.
Yeah.
And
well, that is the model for it.
That is the model for it.
It may be working through some other mechanism. My flying instructor and about three or four other people I've known that have had accidents paragliding, they said that it's relieved their pain and appeared to work.
Mm-hmm.
So appearing and working, what is the? I guess the dividing line would be repeatability across a wide variety of people, and apparently these things, at least the acupuncture and the chiropractor, do have repeatability across wide varieties of people to the point where nobody's suing acupuncturists or chiropractic in wide swaths.
Except that there is a site called whatstheharm.net.
Yeah.
This guy, Tim Farley, put this up. And basically he lists the number of people who have, instead of seeing medical doctors, gone to acupuncturists and died.
Yes.
He lists these things that make
and if they
news.
And with their condition, if they'd gone to a regular doctor, they wouldn't have died?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Can't say for sure.
No. But he's saying for sure,
well,
if
no.
they hadn't gone, they would have had a fighting chance. If they had gone to the
regular. They might have. You know, there are examples of that, of people going to see homeopaths rather than getting medication and dying. Many, many, many such things.
Yes, yes.
But there's also Christian scientists who won't see doctors. And,
right.
And then it becomes this religion thing. And, of course, that's bullshit, too. So there's no easy way around it.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's like, well, fuck them. You know? And then you think, well, they've got relatives and things that are counting on this. Maybe they've been led astray. I don't think it's as such of a huge problem, personally, I don't think, as some skeptic organizations would have it be, because a lot of
I don't really have a major problem with it. I know that it's bullshit. I don't have a problem the fact that homeopaths exist, that acupuncturists exist. That to me isn't the same thing as things that do lead directly to death, like the ones I've mentioned earlier, HIV denial and vaccination denial. That does lead directly to death. And that's all. That's all. Basically, you got to be open-minded, but you don't want to be so open-minded your brains fall out.
I don't know. I always hated that quote, but whatever.
Well, it makes sense.
That's all. It does make sense, but it's also a judgment call. No.
Well, it's okay to make judgments. I mean, you got to make judgments. You need your critical judgment.
Mean, right, exactly. But I mean a judgment call where somebody says something and they're saying it and it sounds like an absolute, but it's always a judgment call. Everything's a judgment call. It's just that some judgment calls are backed up with a little better evidence and research behind them than others. But it's always a judgment call. I mean, there's no certainty in anything. If I had exhausted all my normal paths of medical attention and none of them had availed themselves and had helped, yeah, I'd go see some weird... Some people go there first, and that's probably wrong.
And that is,
but that's my that's their personal choice.
What's his name? Andy Kaufman, going to the Philippines for
psychic surgery.
Psychic surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now he was probably going to drop dead any day.
Anyway,
when he did that, and however, he probably spent a lot of money. That was obviously wasted, and he put some of money into the pockets of people that are killing people. You know,
knowingly.
Knowingly killing people.
Meaning they know it's bullshit.
They know it's bullshit.
How do you know that?
They have to.
Well, that sounds like a belief to me.
Well, of course it's a belief. I believe that they know what they're doing.
Okay.
You know, that's what they're doing. They're scamming people for money. They may
pretend strongly. I think
that
there
they
is
want
a
to believe that they're, they actually
I think
have
there
power,
is a segment of people that are scamming people for money. That may be bigger or smaller as you see fit. But I believe there are also some people that, though it is bullshit, they do not believe it is, and they think they're helping people.
I doubt there are very many of those.
The kind of people that get the chicken livers and hide them and
That's scams.
Yeah,
you know, John of God down in Mexico. That's a scam. But it's okay. I mean, if people want to be scammed, that's
fine. Fine. That's fine.
Yeah. You know.
I don't have the Hermanos Cantalaba doing She Love You. I don't know why. I thought I had that. That is a good one, too.
I actually have that at home.
Yeah, I figured you would.
Yeah.
Anything else, Adam Gorightly, you think maybe we should play? And don't say Stinky Poodle. That's my go-to crazy song.
Well, I'd like to play a song by Bing Selfish called "The Uncertainty Principle," and it's from his album "Space College and the Theory of Everything," which came out a few years ago. And this is, of course, a song about the uncertainty principle, about Heisenberg.
It took Heisenberg to observe, though it might seem absurd, in the subatomic world nothing is really quite the same. A position and momentum never makes him take.
I'm sorry, dirty CD. Let me see if I can clean that. This was a CD I made a few months ago. Looks fine.
You never know.
It seemed to be the right thing to play, too. Oh, well.
I don't have any science music. Oh, I have He's Just a Scientist. I like that one. You've heard that, right?
Yes, and there's the wonderful song, "Oh, What a Skeptic I Am," by what's his name, from the Geologic Podcast. We'll try this one more time.
It took Heisenberg to observe, though it might seem absurd. In the subatomic world, nothing is really quite the same. A particle's position and its momentum can never be measured simultaneously with precision. You can't stand back and make an observation, oh no. You're a participator. The time an atomic event takes and the energy it involves can never be known, they'll always go unresolved. Your classical concepts suddenly dissolve. It's very strange. There's no way to explain. The uncertainty principle. The uncertainty principle. The uncertainty principle means you can't pin down a particle. Means you'll never pin down a particle. Catch that particle, trap that particle, find that particle, define that particle, trace that particle, embrace that particle, encase that particle, disgrace that particle, pick that particle, lick that particle, tick that particle, stick that particle, nap that particle, grab that particle, dab that particle, stab that particle.
That's being selfish. And the uncertainty principle.
Damn it, you've heard he's just a scientist. Damn it.
I hadn't heard that.
Bing's a great dude. I've been listening to his music since the
early 80s. Oh, you know what? I haven't made a... it's not something I'm going to play, but I haven't made a... MP3s of the Guitar Geek Festival from last week.
Which last I heard week. You play some of last week, yeah.
Yeah, and we said who was there. The Trash Men were there.
Yeah, what were they doing there?
They were playing surf music.
And it sounded pretty surfy.
They did really well. The only thing that disappointed me about it is they had the guy that's put it together, Deke Dickerson of the Dave and Deke band, and a very good guitarist and famous guitarist in his own right, sang the Surfin' Bird music.
Oh.
But they had the original drummer, and they did another Surfin' Bird song. And I guess they did two or three with that Surfin' Bird voice in it. And one of them, and he did actually did one of them. The guy sounds exactly the same as he did back when Surfin' Bird came out. He sounded like that, just exactly like that. Why did you get rid of Ben Walter?
I didn't mean to. I meant to bring him up.
Uh-oh.
I see. Well, I did have... I did bring something that I wanted to share from Sun Ra. Though how to get into it, it takes time. I've spent a lot of time...
We've got 12 minutes.
I've spent a lot of time with Sun Ra the last few years. I work with Michael Shepard and the Transparency label, And Transparency has released a whole mess of fantastic Sun Ra material the past year. And now we've gotten in touch with the actual Sun Ra archivist, a guy named Michael Anderson. And it looks like we may even be launching a new version of Saturn Research.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Through Transparency. So, at any rate, Sun Ra had, when he was Sonny Blount, had a had an experience in 1936 when he was 22.
Do you believe him?
Well, he didn't talk about it until 1953.
Oh, and he said it happened in 22.
When he was 22, yeah. But the story he tells has no solid edges to it, okay? He describes coming home in the springtime in 1936 and finding his roommates have pulled out at his college, have pulled out his diary and are reading his diary and start laughing at it. And he says they were having a good time, so then I abolished the diary. But I still retain the memory. I guess he means he threw away the diary. But I still retain the memory. And in there, I said that these spacemen contacted me. They wanted me to go to outer space with them. They were looking for somebody who had that type of mind. They said it was quite dangerous because you had to have perfect discipline. I'd have to go up with no part of my body touching outside of the beam. Because if I did, going through different time zones, I wouldn't be able to get that far back. So that's what I did. And it's like, well, it looked like a giant spotlight shining down on me. And I call it transmolecularization. My whole body changed into something else. I could see through myself. And I went up. Now, I call that an energy transformation because I wasn't in human form. I thought I was there, but I could see through myself. Then I landed on a planet that I identified as Saturn. First thing I saw was something like a rail, a long rail of a railroad track coming out of the sky and landed over there in a vacant lot. Then I found myself in a huge stadium, and I was sitting in the last row in the dark. I knew I was alone. They were down there on the stage, something like a big boxing ring. So then they called my name, and I didn't move. They called my name again, and I still didn't answer. Then all at once, they teleported me, and I was down there on that stage with them. They wanted to talk with me. They had one little antenna on each ear, a little antenna over each eye. They talked to me. They told me to stop teachers' training because there was going to be great trouble in schools. There was going to be trouble in every part of life. That's why they wanted to talk to me about it. Don't have anything to do with it, they said. Don't continue. They would teach me some things that when it looked like the world was going into complete chaos, when there was no hope for nothing, then I could speak. But not until then, I would speak then and the world would listen. That's what they told me. Next thing, I found myself back on planet Earth in a room with them, and it was the back room of an apartment, and there was a courtyard. They was all with me. At that time, I wasn't wearing robes. I had on one of theirs they put on me. They said, go out there and speak to them.
What happened? Music?
Yeah, here we go.
Sun Ra.
Anyway.
Whoa! Sounds like 70s.
This is Sun Ra playing a song called UFO. It's just a disco.
Yeah.
With Sun Ra.
Sorry, you heard that Sun Ra Batman theme?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Jamming. Yeah, this comes from the album On Jupiter from 1979. Anyway, that's the abduction story that Sonny's telling there.
It's a classic contactee story.
Yeah. And he started telling it in 1953, which is what, a couple years...
But do you believe him?
Do I believe him?
Yeah.
I believe that... Sonny combined space, UFO imagery, and ancient Egyptian imagery to create a new form of myth for black people. I think that what he was telling were parables. I think he believed what he said.
Yeah.
And that's as far as I'll take it. I think he believed what he said.
That's funny because that's exactly my, almost exactly my attitude toward contactees. Mm-hmm. I have very little feeling, very little belief that any of them went anywhere in space or met anybody from outer space. However, I believe a few of them may have had some sort of weird experience, and most of them were doing that. They had told this story so many times they believed it. So I believe that they believed it. A few of the contactees, like Orfeo Angelucci, I believe that he may have had some sort of experience. I don't think it's with space people or anything like that, but he had some sort of altered state experience, which may have involved something that was external to his consciousness.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that kind of stuff fascinates me and has for years, which is why I like Sun Ra quite a bit. Because he's doing exactly the same thing, and he plays great music. And the only other music I found from contactees is Molly Thompson.
What's his name had space music to From Outer Space to You, that guy.
Oh yes, that too. Howard Menger.
Yeah, Howard Menger.
The depressed organ grinder music, I call it.
Yeah. I almost brought that with me today, but I knew you had it, so I wasn't going to worry about it.
There is a copy of that at the L.A. Public Library.
Fucking A.
For people to check out.
See, I love it.
Sigrid checked it out for me. I'm sorry. Mr. Fab from Music for Maniacs, he checked that out and posted it on his site and then alerted me to it. And I think I linked to it. Have you heard any of the shows he was on? He brings in absolutely amazing shit.
When he was on here, you mean?
Yeah.
But that was before we had stereo recording.
Oh, yeah.
So I would love to hear that in stereo. No. If he's been on recently, since we've got this setup, I would love to...
I'm not sure if I recorded it with the setup. I have been recording, except for this one, I have been recording every show with my little Tascam.
Which is great.
But
you should do both.
Yeah. I do both, usually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because, in case. And the ones that I don't get or mess up on my recorder, I just stick a USB in there and grab it off there when I leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically have every show I've done since my site got hacked and by Russians and destroyed.
I'd like to know more about that.
Yeah, apparently.
Did you figure out those Russians?
Miles Lewis, who administered the site, figured it out by looking... you can figure it out by looking at what contacts came into your website at certain times.
I would never go to a doctor for healthcare.
Yeah, one of the listeners said he would never go to a doctor for healthcare. Well, you know, it's funny because that's the first place I would go if I felt like I was going to die. If nothing was working, yeah, I'd start branching out. No matter how much time I had.
I probably wouldn't, but I would understand people who would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was at work earlier this year, and in 2 hours, my neck swelled up so much, my throat, that I couldn't talk. I could barely breathe. And I went to my boss at work and said, I got a doctor. I went to the Kaiser because that's what I have the health plan with.
That's your coverage, yeah.
Yeah.
From you have coverage from job?
No, I have it from Sigrid's job.
Sigrid's job, great.
So, because she's at Commerce, which is, they used to have tons of money and before everybody ran out of money because of the casino. And I hope they don't have the online gambling because that means there's going to be even less money in their coffers.
You know, all of my married friends have the same setup. The guys have coverage from their wives. Every single married friend of mine has that.
The reason I don't have it is because when I went to interview for the job to sweeten the deal, I said, you don't have to cover my health. It's covered by my wife. So why don't you up my salary a little bit?
Did they?
Which worked, yes.
Oh, that's cool.
So they did.
Cool.
Yeah. But I went down there and I sat there for half an hour feeling like I was going to die. It felt like hours. They finally take me in there, and then the guy tells me that he can't really see that much is wrong with me, and like tells me to. He implies to me that I'm complaining more than I should be, and I was so pissed off, and I still felt like I was going to die, and I'm like, and this nurse comes in, and I'm just like said, get that doctor away from me. He's denying there's anything wrong with me. I do not complain when there's nothing wrong with me. I feel extremely sick to the point where I can barely breathe. And the guy says it's nothing. And this, you know, and it's funny because she went out there and another doctor came in. Because I actually stood up and I was dizzy. And I looked like I felt like I was going to fall down. And I probably looked terrible. But I wanted to emphasize to her that she was, that other doctor was being an asshole. So then I had another doctor come in, which was, you know, he probably felt the same way, but at least he was nice. And he says, look, I don't know what it is. And they do the same thing every time. Go home, antibiotics. Well, and the problem is that probably 95 to 99% of the time, they're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are they going to do? Unless it's absolutely life-threatening, send you home with some antibiotics, give your body a fighting chance to kill it off.
Pretty
obviously.
Much. Very much.
But
I don't know. I finally,
I've heard horror stories about all kinds of different doctors, including Kaiser.
In 40 years, I've never had a regular doctor until the last 3 years. And now I have a doctor, a woman doctor. She's really attractive. Her name is Lopez.
Yeah.
And she's wonderful. And
her first name is Lopez?
Sheila Lopez.
Oh.
And I actually saw her a couple days ago because I had my ear unplugged. As an old man, I start to, my ears plug up, and I have to get them, you know, flushed out.
Yeah.
It's really, and because I'm a DJ, I need my ears, you know?
Yeah.
It's really a pain. But I love going to see Dr. Lopez. Hey, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun.
Yes, it has. And apparently some of the normal, the usual listeners have enjoyed it. I got a couple of nice messages here on Facebook from a few people. Thank you, Adam, Carlos, and Walter, who was going to be here, but he had some family business that held him up, so he'll probably be back next week.
Cool.
I don't know who I'm going to have on next week. I had this idea, and I don't know if it's a dream. I want to interview Art Bell on my show.
Art has completely withdrawn from radio right now. So
I know.
Maybe you can get a hold of him. And I don't know. Do you have a private number for him?
No. Mm-hmm. However, I know people who might know how to get in touch with him. Unfortunately, one of them hates my guts. Linda Moulton Howe.
Yeah, you were talking about her last week, too.
Yeah, I know.
She sounds crazy to me. But I love the interview that you did with Art, where you were on his show, and you talked about Kill Radio.
I mean, yes.
I still, that's a cherished moment in the history of Kill Radio. You know? Oops.
Uh-oh, what's that?
Peter and Chad and Jeremy.
Oh, okay.
It's Chad and Jeremy.
We walked by soft kisses on a summer's day.
Remember them?
Oh, no, I don't have it. All I have is my recording of the Minotaur, under my name, the Minotaur rocket launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base.
God, my glasses are falling off my head. Here's the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
Yay!
Doing Beautiful People. This is a pretty good sign-off.
Let's kill all the beautiful people, string them up by their beautiful hair. Let's kill all the beautiful people, have the world to ourselves. Let's kill all the shiny and gifted, the clever ones that make me feel small. The strong, the brave, the self-assured ones. Let's kill them all. Sing with me, children. Let's kill all the beautiful people, string them up by their beautiful hair. Let's kill all the beautiful people, have the world to ourselves. Let's kill all the happy, secure ones, the ones who think we got other skills, the ones who say, but you're beautiful inside, let's give them pills. Let's kill all the beautiful people, string them up by their beautiful hair. Let's kill all the
Let's kill all the beautiful people, have the world to ourselves. Kill and maim and gaily garrote them, the ever so humble, the faultless, the thin, the ones who want to watch over and help us. Let's do them in. Everybody sing. Let's kill all the beautiful people, men of Harlem.
String them up by their beautiful hands.
The Women's Institute.
Let's kill all the beautiful people,
have the world to ourselves.
People of France.
Laissez de tout et le beau monde, on n'est pas le beau cheveu.
Alan Jones.
Let's kill all.
All together.
Let's kill all the beautiful people. Sing them up by the beautiful hands.
Everybody in the whole world.
Let's kill all the beautiful people. And the world to ourselves.
That's the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, and Let's Kill All the Beautiful People from 1967, I think. Oop. Oh.
Yeah, I've never heard that one before. I've got a lot of Bonzo stuff.
I found that on YouTube.
Yeah, well, that's where you have to look. I've looked at every video of Bonzo Dog Band on YouTube. That Do Not Adjust Your Set stuff's amazing. The blackface stuff, Vivian Stanchel did.
All right, well, we will put some stuff on for you to listen to on Kill Radio after we leave here. I will be back tomorrow morning briefly. Brad House will be on at noon with Bike Sport and Brad's Vinyl. There will be shows tomorrow evening. I will be on Tuesday morning for Moaning Becomes Me. No, that's my show on Tuesday morning. It's called Moaning Becomes Me. It's when I do my news and stuff.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to sign off then. Should we sign off?
Yes.
Okay.
It's Radio Mysterioso on here on radio.org, killradio.org. And we'll see you next week. I don't know if we're going to have a guest yet or not. Walter may be here. I may do another music show. I haven't done one of those in a while, so we'll see. I'm going to probably start posting stuff, one, probably on the site, and two, on the Kill Radio site, and two, maybe back on Radio for All, just so that there's some access to these shows after they're recorded and done live.
I think that's a good idea.
Until I get a proper server to put these shows up on and go through the incredibly laborious process of re-uploading everything and redoing all my links and everything, which is going to be a pain in the ass. However, to give the five people that listen to this show regularly a fighting chance to hear the show later, and the 300 people who do listen to it later, I will start putting them up on Radio for All, and there will be appropriate reminders and announcements in the appropriate places. Thank you.